including Uyghur Muslims and Falun Gong practitioners, are being harvested for profit, sometimes when patients are still alive. The China Tribunal collected evidence from medical experts, human rights investigators, and others. It was chaired by Sir Geoffrey Nice, a QC, a prosecutor at the International Criminal Tribunal for former Yugoslavia. He said, quote, "The conclusion shows that very many people have died indescribably hideous deaths for no reason, that more may suffer in similar ways, and that all of us live on a planet where extreme wickedness may be found in the power of those for the time being running a country with one of the oldest civilizations known to modern man," he said. So, Roshan Abbas, can you comment, can you say what you know about this forced organ donations?
The airport in Kashgar has a special line dedicated for Uyghur people. And go back to three, four years ago when Qin Chuanguo came over. He mandatorily forcing Uyghur people to give blood. And they selected the Uyghur people's DNA. We were wondering, what is this for? And later on, we realized that there have been reports, they're advertising halal organs, which is the Uyghur Muslims' bodies. So the illegal organ harvesting is also making the Uyghur people the victims of illegal organ harvesting, that they are being kept in the camps today.
Roshan Abbas, a Uyghur American activist, and independent researcher Adrian Zenz will link to his report at democracynow.org. Happy 60th anniversary to Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for our year-long paid video production fellowship here in New York City. The deadline is Sunday. Learn more and apply at democracynow.org. And Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez will be speaking at the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture in Harlem tonight about the 50th anniversary of the New York chapter of the Young Lords, which he co-founded. We will live stream the event on democracynow.org beginning at 6 p.m. Eastern. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus
enrollment
of Henry
is
Ford
now
College.
Open for Henry Ford College.
This
fall
is
classes,
WHFR
which begin
Dearborn,
August 22nd.
Featuring
for
local and independent artists.
Attention licensed practical nurses. Are you looking for a convenient way to earn your RN degree? Do you need the flexibility of a program who recognizes you for your previous hard work as an LPN? Here's great news. Henry Ford College has exactly what you're looking for with their advancement LPN to RN Bridge program. You can advance your career and become a licensed registered nurse. Want more info? Give us a call at our School of Health and Human Services at 313-845-9877. That's 313-845-9877.
Every day, we go about our lives driven by routine, our vision clouded by the very normalcy we take for granted. Countless victims of human trafficking walk among us, invisible. It's time to open our eyes. The Blue Campaign provides a unified voice for those who combat human trafficking, whether it's forced labor, domestic servitude, or the sex trade. Learn what you can do to help by visiting dhs.gov/bluecampaign.
How would you like a sweet late afternoon treat with a steady rockin' beat that generates some heat to make your day complete? If so, be sure to check out the Go With The Flow Mike Holloway Show to hear what those rockin' blues are all about. Every Friday afternoon, 4 to 6 p.m., only on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Yeah!
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists.
Attention licensed practical nurses, are you looking for...
And welcome, welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today I've had the honor of having an interview with a member of our military, Aaron Bartell. He is running a new 5K run in Taylor called Running to Honor, in honor of the veterans, with proceeds going to the VFWs of Taylor and also of Wyandotte. And this is an interview that I am honored to play. And without much further ado, let me get to that. Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to WHFR Journal. I am here with a gentleman with a cause that I believe that we should all be believing in. Aaron Bartell?
Yes.
Yep. Did I get it correctly?
Bartell, it's Hungarian.
Bartell. Oh, are you Hungarian? I'm Hungarian, too.
Hungarian. B-A-R-T-A-L. But
oh, okay.
It's pronounced B-A-R-T-A-L.
I see. Very cool. My grandmother came from Hungary before World War I, and it was interesting how she got here, but that's a story for another time,
I suppose.
So, well, tell me a little bit about yourself. Are you from downriver here originally? Or
Yeah, I grew up in Lincoln Park. I graduated from Lincoln Park High School, and when I graduated, I went in the Army at the age of 17.
Oh, very good. So, how long were you in the Army?
6 years. I spent 4 years in Fort Riley, Kansas, and 2 years in Baghdad, Iraq.
Oh, you served over in Iraq. That was probably very interesting.
You know, it was. It was hot. But, you know, that's where they told me to go, so that's where I had to go.
Yeah, you don't really have a choice. It's not like you pick and choose where you're going. It's the Army way, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, it's important that we have soldiers that take orders, because if we had a military where people didn't listen or had opinions, then we'd probably fail. So it's good that you have people that just go where you tell them to go.
Well, that's a good thing, and I just want to take a minute and thank you for your service. I appreciate you gentlemen very much. All the men and women of the service that have served, you know, they all deserve kudos.
And I appreciate the fact that you've remember about veterans. You know, veterans are like 1% of our population in the country, so the chance that someone even knows a veteran is not very high. So I just want to say thank you for recognizing veterans and taking the time to talk to a veteran.
Well, you're very welcome. I try to do as much as I can for veterans. I've been a nurse 37 years. I've met, countless veterans, and I thank every one of them for their service. So, you know, it's something that we need, and people don't want to serve. There's so many that don't want to. So I thank everybody that has. So tell me, can you tell us a little about your service? How was it when you first got into service?
You know, like anything, it was a culture shock. I went at 17. They tell you when to brush your teeth, when to get up, when to eat, all those different things. But it was good because it established discipline. I spent some time in Iraq, like I said. I mainly trained the Iraqi army and patrolled for roadside bombs, conducted raids on insurgent strongholds. And I did that for 2003-2004 during the initial ground assault. And then again in 2005-2006, I spent another year there.
Oh, so you had two tours of duty there.
Two tours. So every time I went there, it just seemed to get progressively more violent and dangerous. So I look at it like three strikes and you're out. First time, some close calls. Second time, some really close calls. If I went back a third time, I might not come back. Now, if they told me to go back, I would, because that's my responsibility. I signed up to serve. But I don't think I would voluntarily go back.
No, I don't blame you. You did your time there, and you know, and you served at Fort Riley, Kansas also, huh?
Yeah, Fort Riley, Kansas. I wanted to be out in the country. You know, I'm from downriver in Lincoln Park, you know, the Detroit area, so it's all city. I wanted to go out in the country and see what the country was about. So it's one of many places in the country where you have wide open land and farms, but I enjoyed my time there.
Did you feel at any time like becoming a farmer and moving down there or anything like that? Or
No, but I made it a point on the weekend to go find all these small little country towns and the main streets and just kind of take it all in, because you don't get that when you move to the city.
Well, that's true, and you know, I know a friend from Kansas, and she always wants to go back, and eventually she will, but you know, it's going to take her time.
It's a it's a simple life in a good way.
It is a good way, and to me, it embodies the American spirit. You know, I mean, people, you live in an area like Detroit, and that you get a little confused, I think, as to what goes on. I mean, you know, it's just such a confusing place, even if you lived here all your life like we have, you know. So what training Iraqi soldiers, that must have been quite a routine.
I was not happy about it when I got the task, if you want me to be honest, but I did it because that's my responsibility to do what I'm told. But it was a little uncomfortable that it was me and five other American soldiers and probably 100 or more Iraqi soldiers with AK-47, you know, automatic assault rifles.
Sure.
And we've seen, as time went on, some of those people are insurgents. They've infiltrated the Iraqi army, and they've done so just to kill Americans because they're outnumbered, right? So I definitely was concerned when I was training them that one of them may just want to turn the gun on accident and kill an American. Or maybe there was an accident because accidents, I don't want to say accidents happen with guns, but people are careless with guns and
they
people
are.
Get
they
hurt.
Are. Well, were a lot of the recruits, were they like from days of Saddam's forces or anything like that? Or were
no,
they...
these were mostly people that were oppressed by Saddam.
I see.
The loyalists to Saddam kind of scattered into the woodwork and stuff. You've got three main groups in Iraq, and by no means am I a subject matter expert, but you have the Kurds, which at the time were in the northern part of Iraq.
Right.
You have the Sunnis, which are like in the middle of Iraq, and the Shiites in the south. And I would consider these to be like factions where they don't intermingle with each other. The Sunnis don't get along with the Shiites, or at least at that time they didn't. So when we first went in there and we started making like a military, the first thing we tried to do was put all these people together in one unit. And what we found was they were fighting amongst each other because they're so deep-rooted in that faction or that segregation that they just don't get along. So then we made units of Sunnis and units of Shiites, and we kept them segregated, and it worked better. But then when we had to send them into an area to police or whatever, we had to send that type into the same type neighborhood, or would be discrimination. So you couldn't send a Shiite unit into a Sunni neighborhood.
Well, that makes it difficult. You know, I mean, I think the British had to do that in India with the Muslim and the Hindu factions.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it difficult because, I mean, in this country, I mean, everybody, you know, whatever religion you are, you know, it seems to get along. And
it'll take time. I guess I would compare it to racism, right? So racism is not right by any means.
Right.
As time goes on in this country, I would like to believe that with each new generation that comes up, they're more receptive to everybody's create equal. And as people naturally pass on, they take some of those old traditions with them. I would like to think in this country, we can look at everybody for who they are, not their skin color or gender or religion. The same thing in Iraq with the Sunnis and Shiites and Kurds. It'll take time. It'll take a very long time because they were oppressed and segregated for so long. But I believe over time they will learn to work with each other.
I think they will because they're not exactly in a neighborhood full of other friendly countries.
Yeah.
And just, you know, what little I know about Middle Eastern and Asian history, they're kind of right at that point where armies go through Iraq to get somewhere else, you know, or something. But so what did you do when you got out of the service?
So when I got out, going to war was the easy part. Getting out was the hard part. That was really when the big challenge started. And you think about that and you think, how could you go to war and call that easy? Because you had the supplies you needed. You had directions on what to do. When you get out, you think, oh, someone's going to offer me a good job. I'm a veteran. And what I found was I had a hard time finding a job. I was working at a grocery store before I went in the military, so they saved my job for me, which was appreciative. But I was looking to move on to better things.
Well, sure.
You know, surviving a war and then going back to stocking bread on a shelf is not a good it's not a good connecting job. So I applied at over 100 jobs, 100 different companies, and no one would call me. I had a bachelor's degree in accounting, and no one would call me back. And finally, as I got a break from a friend, and I got in with a package media company. They make Xbox games and DVDs, and through there I eventually worked to a logistics company, and now I'm with one of the big three. But where I'm at now, I started talking to a couple of these HR departments of the other companies we work with, and I said, do you have a veteran hiring program there? Are you veteran friendly? And some of them do.
Yeah.
For example, Lowe's is very veteran friendly. They have employees that are allowed to bring their service dogs to work, which helps with PTSD. But what this couple HR people told me was, Aaron, I'm going to be honest with you, veterans are not an attractive hire. There's a perception out there that they're crazy. They all suffer from PTSD. They're going to come into the workplace with an assault rifle and start hurting people. All probably because you saw on the news one day that someone did that, but that doesn't represent all of us.
Not at all, no.
Then the light bulb went off in my head, and I'm like, you know, I bet this is part of, not the whole reason, but part of the reason why people didn't want to call me. So like, well, this guy just came back from Iraq. That's what his resume says. So,
right.
Like,
right.
We would rather take somebody who's we can just plug in and tell them to do something. And to be honest, when a veteran comes out of the military, they have probably more experience than a lot of CEOs in the business world. So how do you take somebody with that type of experience of leadership and then plug them in an entry-level job? So we call that making the connection. We want to make the connection where we can connect veterans to the correct job.
Well, that does help because it's not an easy transition. You know, I've had many friends that it's been difficult. And, you experience more difficulties than this, I imagine, too.
Yeah, and along that same path, so veterans, they get out, they can't find a job, so that means they can't pay their bills. So maybe they have a house or an apartment, but then eventually they can't pay their bills, so then they go to stay in their car, sleep in their car, they become homeless.
Yeah.
Eventually they can't put gas in their car, they get ticketed, their car gets towed, and then they figure they're proud people, they don't want to ask for help, and they say, well, if I survived in Iraq, I can survive under an underpass on I-75 here, it'll be okay. But then that's when mental illness starts to set in. You're going to the bathroom in a bucket. You're reflecting on how you saved soldiers' life and led thousands of troops. And now you're on an underpass or on a corner where no one will even look at you or acknowledge you. Like, you're not even human. And so it's a downward path. And eventually, maybe you get into recreational drug use or alcohol to help relieve some of the pain. Maybe you get into petty crimes to get some money just to buy some food for the day. And then eventually, you get into some of these gateway drugs, which will eventually lead you to maybe heroin. Maybe you'll have a fentanyl overdose. Or maybe you'll just commit suicide, like our 20 to 22 veterans are doing every day, because you can't deal with the physical or mental pain of what you dealt with, and trying to fit back in. And people you defended freedom for won't even look you in the eye. They look away like they didn't see you.
Yeah, it's, you know, because I remember first seeing that with Vietnam veterans. I was too young for the Vietnam War. But, you know, just the looks people gave them and heard insults, you know, you guys were killing babies or whatever, you know, because of the massacre things that occurred, but those occur in every war, and it was just unfair to the troops.
Yeah, I mean, shame on us as a country. I hope we never treat veterans the way that the Vietnam veterans were treated. It was just horrible. I don't know how anybody could think that was right. And I'm glad to see at least veterans now are getting better welcome homes, but we owe a lot to the Vietnam veterans, and I don't know that we can ever really fix what went on there. We won't forget, but we should certainly never act like that again.
No, we shouldn't. We need to take care of our people. I mean, we're the richest country on earth. We should be able to take care of everyone, and especially those who have served.
I might be a little biased because I'm a veteran, but I've always said every veteran, when they get out, the government should just cut them a monthly check of, let's say, $1,200, enough to get a small apartment, get some food.
Yeah.
You would clean up a lot of the homeless veteran population. Not all of it, because some of those people are homeless by choice.
True.
It's a simpler life for them, and that's what they need. But some of those people would misuse the money for inappropriate things. But at least you could help them out where they could have a roof above their head and food.
Yes.
And I really believe that if nothing else, they would say, you know what, at least my government cares enough to send me that check every month and say thank you for serving. I mentioned that 1% of our population in the country is veterans. So if we had to take care of 1% of our country and just give them a permanent paycheck of $1,200, which is not a ton of money to live off of, that's a small part of our national debt, I would have to imagine.
I would say so, and considering that we've had deficits since 1835, I don't think that they're ever going to straighten that out. But, you know, when you got back, did you start having ideas of starting to do what you now do?
It wasn't until about 2015 that I started running like this one race with this flag, and I started talking about the cost of freedom and stuff. And I just wanted to remind others that freedom's not free. So I ran that race, and I got great feedback from people to keep doing what you're doing. And I started signing for more races. I ran like 62 races the same year, and now I'm in my fifth year of doing this. And it occurred to me while I was running that what happens if I'm not here? Who's going to pick up my flag, and who's going to continue to carry the flag? And I think the answer is nobody. So now that I have a nonprofit called Running to Honor, and we're having this annual 5K in Heritage Park on Saturday, July 27th, I can make sure that this continues to live on even after I go. I plan on being around for many more years, but we never know if we're going to have it tomorrow.
Well, that's true.
It would be very sad if no one was saying my fallen soldiers' names after I was gone. So this way, my people that support me will continue to run this event. So,
you're starting early tomorrow.
We didn't know how the weather was going to be. It looks like it's going to be 70.
Right.
We didn't know if it was going to be hot. Ideally, this race was supposed to be in May, and we couldn't get agreement from the different places we went to. I went to 18 different places to have this Running Down or 5K, and you know, everybody wants to help veterans, but nobody wants to take the step to actually help them. And what I got was, well, we don't want that on our property and
really
things like that. So finally, I came to an agreement with the city of Taylor. and Councilman Tim Woolley.
Okay.
And he helped make this happen.
So how did you manage to come up with this idea? I mean, this is quite an endeavor. I mean, this is I've been hearing about this on the news for a couple weeks now.
Good. That means it's getting out there.
Oh, it is getting out there.
I've gone to races over the past 5 years that were not managed as good as they could have been. You know, maybe there weren't enough porta-johns. Maybe they ran out of medals. Who knows what happened? And I thought, you know, I should host my own race, and I bet I could just pick all these good things and all these bad things and roll it into one race and make it great. And we can make up our own race, and it doesn't have to be Memorial Day or Veterans Day or the 4th of July. I want to talk about veterans every day.
Well, we should. We should.
So I just, on my own, I designed a shirt with the help of some people. I designed a medal. I got some other things here, some displays, some backgrounds. We have the POW/MIA table representing those that we haven't found yet.
Yeah.
The key thing there is they're still alive because we never found any proof that they aren't. So we'll continue to keep that table displayed until all of our prisoners of war and missing action are returned home. There's over 40,000 right now listed as missing action.
Yeah, it's tough, you know. I mean, how do you tell a family that, well, you know, your loved one, we don't know what happened to them, basically, but they're missing in action, but we presume they're dead, and it's like a lot of them aren't, you know.
Nope, not until we find their remains, because they could be. Think about the Vietnam War. People who served in Vietnam are in their 70s right now.
Yes.
They could still be in prison by a rebel group in some of these Asian countries, and they're being tortured because of whatever Americans did to their people back during the Vietnam War.
Sure.
And we just don't know. So how would the veteran feel if he was found alive and brought home and find out that his country basically thought he was done? That's why missing in action are so important. We need to keep their memory alive and keep searching for them. If we were to find them and they found out their country thought that they were dead, then they would probably go commit suicide because they wouldn't have anything to live for.
Yes. And just about every veteran I've ever met or taken care of as a nurse, you know, they all have. There's always something that troubles them from their service.
Yep.
And whether they were frontline or support troops or whatever. And I think it's just an important debt that we owe you gentlemen and ladies for the service that you've given her. Well, let's talk more about your race. Now, so you went to a lot of places and they didn't want to have it, or was it scheduling difficulties?
There's a lot of politics involved when you deal with different city governments and different companies. Some companies said, I just don't want you to leave any trash behind. And I thought to myself, well, what kind of trash would we leave? I mean, we have paper cups at the water stations, but we pick them up. I mean, we created the mess, we pick the mess up.
Right.
So other places, there's county roads, and apparently it's a big deal to temporarily shut down a county road for like a parade or something.
I see.
I couldn't quite get some of these entities to get the road shut down, you know, even just for a half hour or so. So that was most of the difficulty I had. Some of these places, I tried to have it at a couple of automotive test tracks, and they said, well, this is just a private area. We don't want anybody back here to see what we're working on or anything like that. And so it made it difficult. But I wanted it to be a unique place. I don't want to just go run around a high school track.
Oh, and yeah.
Here in Taylor, it's a beautiful park, and we're going through the first responder area at Wayne County Community College where all these specialized units like SWAT and Department of Homeland Security train. So it's a fenced-off area that they're opening up for us to come through, and it's just going to be a very unique, pretty event.
It's a beautiful area, the Heritage Park. As a matter of fact, my daughter got married at the gardens there last year, and Wayne State, you know, I mean, Wayne County with that vast area there. It's a beautiful part of Taylor, and I'm glad there's a lot of parts of Taylor that are still, like, green space.
It is. You know, Taylor's very lucky that they have such a great park. It's an open-air pavilion, which is where the event's going to take place. So rain or shine, doesn't matter. We're going to have the event either way.
So how about parking? I know are you going to be able to park at WC3 there?
Yeah, the Wayne County, the Heritage Park has about 1,000 parking spaces.
Okay.
So I'm encouraging everybody to carpool, but the overflow is in the Wayne County parking lot, the Community College parking lot.
Oh, very nice. So this is a 5K run. Now, you run a lot, I understand.
Yeah, I'm running about 1,000 miles a year. I really like to train up for the Detroit Free Press Marathon in October.
Yeah.
That is something I just really enjoy doing, running across the bridge to Canada and coming back through the tunnel. So it's just become a yearly tradition.
It's about the only time you go to Canada without your passport or enhanced driver's license, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're supposed to carry your passport on you when you run this particular race.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. But normally people don't get pulled out of line if they're running, as long as your bib is visible. If somebody's hiding their race bib, then custom is going to pull you out of line.
Oh, okay. So what you're going to have this race in the morning, and you're having a party in the afternoon here also? Is this related to the race?
You could call it related to the race. There's another organization called Heroes Movement.
Okay.
They help veterans get into gyms for free and help them with movement-based exercises. And they're having a summer bash party starting at 2 p.m. and going to 10 p.m.
Oh,
and
nice.
The proceeds raised at that, it's going to be right here at the VFW Wyandotte Post. The proceeds raised are going to go to the Wyandotte VFW. So there's going to be some adult beverages. There's going to be some live bands. There's probably going to be some 50-50 raffles and baskets. So it's going to be a good time.
Oh, very good. Now, is there any charge involved in coming to the 5K run?
In the 5K run, right now, because the price goes up the closer we get to the date, that's an incentive to get people to register earlier get a good count. Right now, the price is $45. If you wait till the day of the race, it goes up $5 to $50. And what you get with that is you get a finisher's medal. It's designed very nice. We're past the cutoff of shirts. So I can't give shirts to people because we're so close. But we also get a race bib with a number on it, and the back of the bib says the names of all of our fallen soldiers.
Well, very interesting. So you're starting like it's at early in the morning, I take it.
Yeah, we're going to start. The first person starts walking at 7 a.m. in the morning.
Okay.
We're going to have a pre-race ceremony at 6:30 where we're going to say the names of our fallen soldiers and fallen veterans. And we have an 11-year-old named Jason from the Downriver community that's going to come out and sing the national anthem at 6:55.
Nice. So, very nice. I think I've heard of Jason before because I think he's sang it for other events.
Yeah, yeah. He sings for the Tigers and the Lions. He's amazing.
Very cool.
So I recommend everybody get there about 6 a.m. in the morning just to make sure they can get parking and really take in the different displays we have, like the Fallen Soldier Battle Cross. And, just mingle and appreciate the event. We're also going to have signs with pictures of over 88 of our fallen soldiers and fallen veterans placed around the venue so people can walk around and see what the cost of freedom is.
Well, it is a high cost. And, now, when you got out of the service, did you have any PTSD-associated types of things? Or were you seemed very level-headed and right on. And
I think it took a lot of effort. I guess what I would say is I don't think I have any issues, but I'm building up a good support network in case I do get issues. One of the things I'm concerned about is they're starting to find out that all of the veterans that were exposed to, like, roadside bombs, when those concussion waves go through your body, you know, it really affects your brain, very similar to a boxer. Every time you get hit in the head, you look at Muhammad Ali, for example, it slows down your motor skills.
I see.
And we're starting to see veterans that were in Iraq and Afghanistan that were exposed to repetitive bomb blasts, they're starting to develop ALS and dementia and Alzheimer's. That generally doesn't happen in your 40s.
No.
Some of these veterans, when you say something to them, it takes them about 10 seconds for them to understand what you say, formulate what they're going to say back, and speak the words back to you. And I think we're going to see, by the time a lot of these veterans turn 40 and 50, they might not even remember their own children's names. War is war. Dangerous things happen in war, but really it's the aftercare. And that's the piece that I believe that we're missing is the aftercare. I'm not going to say a hyperbaric chamber would have solved anything, but it would be nice if we had some of this technology over there while the war was going on. When you're exposed to a blast, you could go in maybe a hyperbaric chamber or some other medicine to reduce the effect right there and start a healing instead of leaving it go unchecked. Because a lot of guys got blown up and they went out again and again and again, 4, 5, 6 explosions. And I don't know if we didn't know what the treatment was for that then, or we just didn't have the technology, but we probably could do a better job treating our soldiers on site instead of letting it fester for many years.
I agree with you there. Of course, you know, we really need to improve our VA system and things too. I mean, I know it's overwhelmed these days, but it's hard to see that because a lot of people have to seek treatment outside of the VA to get the care they need, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And, it's hard. Have you, well, you grew up in Lincoln Park, so you probably had a lot of your friends that joined the service, too, did you?
There were some. Right when I was growing up, I graduated in 2000. The big push was to go to college. So that's where we really started to see a lot of people going to college and not necessarily the service.
For me,
I went to service because I didn't want to go to college, but then the service gave me like $50,000 for my Montgomery GI Bill, so
okay.
I got college for free, and I went to college anyways, which is important, but there's not a lot of people, at least in this area, that are going to the military. It's probably different in every part of the United States,
sure.
But whatever it is in our society now, we're focused on getting people a college degree, and it's just not attractive to go into the military, unless you come from a military family.
Yeah, I find that that seems to be where a lot of people come from. You know, my grandfather fought in the First World War. My father was in the Second World War, and uncles maybe in Korea or whatever, and brothers and sisters been in the service. I find that to be a very, very hard thing on other people because they don't want to serve. I don't understand.
Well, and I thought about it when I was doing working in the military, and I added up all the hours I worked in a day. It came out to be like a couple dollars an hour. So, I mean, no one is joining the military to get rich.
Of course not.
You're joining because you serve, because you want to defend freedom. Someone has to do the job, but no one's doing it to get rich. We get paid far below minimum wage.
Oh, I know. And to me, it's like the benefits from the GI Bill still don't make up that difference. You know,
no.
That.
And again, that's where I talked about that permanent check. That would go a long ways towards getting the veterans the minimum of what they need. And even during those difficult days where, like, oh, I'm just so unmotivated about life, at least they have some financial assistance coming to take care of those things, you know, maybe medical expenses or whatever. So.
Yeah, and, you know, the service is, was it, did you find it a difficult decision when you got out of high school to join the service?
No, I knew I wanted to go. I went to JROTC in high school, which is like a pre-training class for military, and I just really liked the structure. I liked there were different ranks, sergeant, captain, and it gave structure for how you can achieve. In the civilian world here, there's not really structure for how you can achieve. It's just kind of like, hopefully you make it and figure it out. But in the military, you've got to do these things to achieve these like levels. It's very clear cut. So I enjoy structure. It keeps me where I need to be. Stress-free, low stress.
Well, you don't seem very stressed. You're very easygoing, easy to talk to, very calm.
It's taken a lot of years, but again, being overseas, being in a third world country, we have a lot of first world problems around here that are not important at all. So when you see third world countries, you're like, what? Someone's upset they didn't get a T-shirt. Someone's upset that that road's got a pothole.
Yeah.
There's people that don't even have clean water. You know what I mean? You can flip on the faucet and be okay here in the U.S.,
Yeah, it makes it hard for us to understand their problems because we are the land of plenty in that. And, so when you were in Iraq, how did the people receive? You know, because they, you know, we in response, of course, to 9/11, we invaded the country, and a lot of people were they happy to see Americans come and get rid of Mr. Hussein?
To start, they were happy, but I think they expected us to kind of go in, get rid of Saddam, and then everything would be okay, and they would run the country themselves. What we found was, and again, by no means am I an expert, I'm just telling you my observation as a guy on the ground, that most of the services, the government services in Iraq, when Saddam was in charge, were ran by his loyalists. The Ba'ath Party, for example, Sunnis. And so when we came in there, all those loyalists basically stepped away and said, okay, we're not going to run garbage pickup. We're not going to run the electric company.
Okay.
We're not going to run the water pot plant. So now we had all these people, a lot of Shiites and a lot of Kurds who wanted to step up and make a difference, but they didn't have the education or the knowledge or training to do these things, and things failed. Garbage services did not get picked up. We Americans had to train Iraqis how to run a water plant, how to run an electrical plant.
Wow.
So I don't think that, and I don't know, but I don't think that the government realized that that the structure would collapse because it was ran by a loyalist And if their leader's not there, then why would they be loyal to somebody else? They won't.
Well, that's true, you know, and especially the way that country is divided that way. I mean, here, you know, we don't care if a Catholic's running it or a Protestant or a Muslim or whoever, as long as the water is on, you know. And that was a problem I didn't think about. I'm learning.
I try to share. I always, sometimes I'm on the news. It's usually an hour interview that gets condensed into 1 minute. And I'm thankful that they help me spread my message. But I wish I get like a Barbara Walters 60 Minutes or something where they would say, you know, tell us everything. And I feel like I have so much to share with
people.
Well,
this is an opportunity for that.
Yeah.
Because this is an hour-long show and we condense it down a little bit. But
I certainly appreciate it. But there's so much homeless veterans, substance abuse, veterans suffering with PTSD and TBI. There are so many topics. And I just try to pick something different to talk about every person I talk to and hope that it just says something in their mind like, wow, I had no clue. And maybe that just helps them do something kind for somebody else, or maybe they do some type of change in the world that benefits veterans or just benefits the world, you know?
Oh, yeah. If everybody did one act of kindness a day, I believe that it'd make a big difference in the world, you know? I mean, it's just amazing how people are... You know, when the speed limit was 55, people drove 70.
Yep.
Now that they brought it back up to the old 70, you know, years ago, people driving 80, 90, 100. And it's like, you know, if you're late, you're going to be late.
Yep.
Get up and a little earlier and get there on time. But, you know, the stress that we go through is nothing compared to what you guys go through, because I think a lot of the stress that, you know, civilians like myself have is put on to ourselves by ourselves. And, you know, I find that, you know, talking to a veteran like yourself, you know, you've been through the ringer. You did 6 years, which is, you know, two more than most people would do. And you've come out of it well. I mean, you're very articulate. You come across as, if I met you on the street, I would not know that you were a veteran.
You got to be calm, cool, and collective. We call it the three C's, calm, cool, and collective. And, you know, there's no reason to get all emotional and all upset, because all that ends up happening when you get in a big fight with somebody is you have to shake their hand later and say, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So how about you prevent the situation and say, how do we deal with this logic?
Well,
how can we function like responsible humans and get what we need to get done?
Well, that's the truth, you know. And one of the things needs to get done is taking care of our veterans.
Yep.
And, you know, with this race now, you know, it's come a long way from when you were starting. You started doing this yourself, you said?
Yeah, we started actively planning this about 18 months ago. And it's come a long ways. We've learned a couple things, but I've kept my hand close on it. I'm a very detailed guy, and I hope it shows through the event and the displays that you see. But the main point of the event is to honor our fallen soldiers and fallen veterans. And a fallen soldier is somebody who was killed in action.
Yes.
A fallen veteran is somebody who died from other causes. That could be somebody who was wounded overseas and came back and passed away in recovery.
Sure.
It could be somebody that passed away from Agent Orange, PTSD, which is a nice way of saying suicide. Or maybe they passed away from natural causes. They served. They're not here anymore. They count. So we're going to honor all of them that served and are not here. And even if we raise no money, as long as we honor them, that's the primary goal. Our secondary goal is, of course, we're trying to raise funds. We want to, the Wyandotte VFW here where we're at, they pay about $2,000 a month in electricity bill.
Wow.
We believe that if we get solar panels for them, we want to get three arrays of solar panels. They're about $30,000 each.
Sure.
If we get those solar panels for them, we can lower that bill from $2,000 a month to $200 a month. And that's really key to helping keep this place operate, because we have less veterans of foreign wars, because we're not fighting as many wars and there's not as many people on the ground like
True.
The beaches of Normandy.
Right.
So we have less revenue coming in. But inflation, expenses keep going up. So we really believe solar panels is the answer. The majority of the money, 93% to be exact, will come to the Wyandotte VFW, the proceeds. The event was supposed to be in Wyandotte. And then as we couldn't get it here for various reasons, we moved to Taylor, like I previously explained.
Yeah.
And then we felt, since we were going into the Taylor community, it was only right that we shared some of the proceeds with the Taylor VFW. So we're going to give 4% to the Taylor VFW, and then Running to Honor, my organization, is going to retain 3%, so we can keep doing these types of things that we do, because there is some cost to an event.
Oh, of course.
The hope is that we can raise the funds and the community will come out and support, so we can take care of our veterans. Right now, we've got about $7,000 raised. We really need about $96,000 to buy the 3 arrays of solar panels. We only got a couple days, but I'm hopeful there will be some very generous businesses or individuals who will really help us out and make that generous donation to help get us to where we need to be.
Yeah, and there are people that will do that. I sure hope that somebody listening today will step up to the plate and donate. I understand what you're going through because, you know, at WHFR here, we get a little bit from the college. Yeah. We're similar to NPR, but we're not NPR. NPR gets government funding. We do not, but yeah. We raise the vast majority of our money from people that donate and from the different events that we have, you know. So I sympathize with your cause, and I'm hoping that we'll get some people to donate from this.
The nice thing is we have almost no overhead. We just basically, the goal is to pick a different charity every year. Maybe, you know, I don't know who we'll pick next year, but I'll talk with my board of directors. But the goal is to pick a couple charities every year and work towards helping them get to a better spot or getting them the equipment they need. And you know, there's really no overhead. I don't have a building. I have a P.O. box that costs me a couple bucks a year. But that way, that allows me to not be pressured to raise money to take care of my organization.
That's as lean as you can run an organization.
I have a degree in accounting, so I'd like to take those skills and run a tight ship. But for people who do want to donate, there's a couple different ways. If you're on Facebook, there's a Running to Honor Facebook page.
Okay.
And there's a fundraiser out there where you just click on it and type in your credit number and credit card number and it donates. There's also the race registration website, which is runningtohonor.nmotive.com. That's E-N-M, as in Mike, O-T-I-V-E.com. And then also, you can also mail us a check at Running to Honor, and it's at 1515 Fort Street, and that's Unit 423. It's in Lincoln Park, Michigan, 48146. So there's no timeline on when we need to raise money. Obviously, the sooner the better, but if somebody feels compelled to help us out, we certainly appreciate that, and we appreciate that they haven't forgotten about our fallen soldiers and veterans.
Yeah, I appreciate what you do. You know, maybe as time goes on, you could turn this into do it twice or even 3 times a year.
That would be nice. You know, this is really a full-time and a half job. I don't get paid for this, and I never will, but I work 45 hours a week, and as soon as I get off work, I work on this race stuff. So it is a full-time job, but it would be nice if like a company came out and said, you know what, Aaron, we love what you're doing. We are gonna pay for you to do this a year. We'll take care of your expenses, just very minimal, so you can pay your bills, and you just keep doing what you're doing for a year, and we'll see what you can accomplish. That would be huge, because I'm doing all this in my spare time. If I could do this full-time, I could take this to the next level. We could have a lot of different things going on in a lot of different states. But, you know, there's resources and time, and you got to balance all that. So.
Well, and you're a young guy, so you got, you got years ahead of you.
Yes, I hope to have many years ahead of me.
I think you will. I mean, just the fact that you get out and run a marathon, you know, I admire that.
Every year.
If I run 10 feet, I'm lucky.
Ah.
But, you know, that's a whole story in itself, but... So you're going to have any like food or anything at this event?
Yep. So for people who come out and you can run or walk, if you can't make it, you can sign up for the virtual 5K. All that means is that I mail you a medal and a race bib with our fallen soldiers' names on it and a thank you letter. And in that, we have a little memento from supporting our veterans. But if you come out to the event, you don't have to run or walk. You can donate money or you can do nothing. You can just enjoy the event. But for the people who are participating, we're going to have bagels and bananas. Panera Bread has donated
the
bagels.
Nice.
They've donated over 600 bagels. We have bottles of water donated by Absapur and Discount Drinks here downriver. We also have a guy named Kevin Maniacci. He operates a kitchen called Maniacci's Italian Kitchen. He's actually in that kitchen right now. He's going to make us enough taco choli for about 300 people.
Oh, wow.
Taco choli is mostacholi and tacos mixed together. It's delicious. And we're going to give that to our finishers. And then we got about 400 cookies coming from Costco. And these are quality cookies. Believe me, I am a cookie connoisseur. I'm going to have nothing but the best cookies at my race. And then the Home Depot has very generously donated 500 American flags that are 1 foot by 1.5 foot. So that way every participant, whether you run or walk, can carry an American flag and they can keep it. And as we take pictures of them along the course, we have professional photography, free photos for everybody.
Oh, okay.
To just be a little bit more patriotic for them. So we have a lot going on. This will be the most patriotic fallen soldier and fallen veteran event downriver, I guarantee you. We have over 96 3x5 American flags that are going to align the start and finish line, donated by the Lincoln Park Exchange Club.
Well, that's awesome. It really is awesome. Are there any volunteers or anybody else you'd like to thank for just...
There are many. There's signoutfitters.com. They're a veteran-owned business here in Wyandotte. They very generously donated the cost of all of the signs that you'll see at the event. It was quite costly. Scott over there, he's a veteran. He's very generous. We have other companies like Al's Asphalt Paving Company and J.P. McGuire's Bar and Grill. They both pitched in the money to get us 10 porta-johns, which are huge for races.
Oh, yeah.
You want to make sure you have enough porta-johns for your runners. And the fact that we have 10, because they're about $80 each, the fact that we have 10, the runners are really going to appreciate that.
Oh, yeah.
I think there's many other sponsors. They're on a list, but I'll wrap up with this one. Councilman Tim Woolley from the City of Taylor. He's a veteran as well. He's the one who encouraged me to go to the City of Taylor and hold the event there. And he's really been key in getting me connected with sponsorship and businesses and walking me through the process. So I'm very thankful. You know, in a climate where we have many different types of politicians, it's good to know that there are people in office that are trying to work for the voters.
Well, that's good to hear, because you hear so many scandals and this and that going on. But, you know, it's refreshing to know that he stepped up to the plate for you guys.
Yeah, he's been huge. I told him, I said, you know, it's going to cost about $800 to get porta-johns there. And he reached out to some of his people and he made it happen. So he's been a great asset. So I'm really, really happy with him, and I think we'll have a partnership there for this event for many years to come.
Well, that'd be great, because that's a great area there. I mean, you know, you got the conservatory, you got Heritage Park, you got Wayne County. I mean, it's a part of Taylor that most people don't really even know about.
You're right. There's a beautiful pond there. There's a lot of historic buildings. So it's the Little League. I think it's the Little League or the Junior Little League World Series takes place there every year. And teams from all over the world come to play. So it's really a special place that gets overlooked. If you gloss over downriver and think we don't have anything special here, we have a lot of special stuff. You just have to get out and look.
Oh, I agree with you, because, you know, people, they think of Dearborn, and Dearborn has, of course, you know, Henry Ford and Greenfield Village and, you know, all these other great things. But downriver really has a lot to offer. And I remember going to school down here. I mean, when I went to school, there were still a couple farms on North Line.
Yeah.
And just to watch it have grown the way it has. And, in fact, I'm going to do a shout-out to my friend Michelle Pelland Corker, who is a nurse practitioner who's 63 years old, like myself, and is active in the Army still. And I just admire that. I mean, you know, I'm too old to join now, but, you know.
And even in regards to the downriver, more so in Michigan, Michigan has a lot to offer. People think, well, I got to go to Florida, go to the beach or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of beaches here in Michigan. There's sand dunes. If you took your time to go drive around the state, go visit the lighthouses, I mean, you would spend years.
Oh, yeah.
But people would say, oh, this is Michigan. We have potholes and it's cold. Well, that's true. But there's a lot of great things about Michigan. You just got to get out and go explore.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And it's everybody thinks that Michigan is Detroit and the Detroit area, but there's so much beyond that. You know, I mean,
oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm just amazed. Every time I've gone up north, I see something new.
Yeah.
You know, and it's nice to see it undeveloped so much, you know.
Yeah. I like the West Branch area myself.
Yeah.
East Tawas. I really like that area. And the further north you go, Mackinac is beautiful.
It is.
You know. As soon as you go on the island, it's all your stress just goes away. The water's clear, and it's very nice.
It is. And I find that it's been a while since I've been to Mackinac. I have to take a trip up there.
You should.
So, you know, is there any other, you know, issues that you have concerning veterans that you'd like to talk about? Because we've got some time.
I think what I would tell you is we know the Vietnam veteran suffers from Agent Orange, a lot of them. For the newer veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan, what we're going to suffer from is what they call burn pits. And I don't know if you've heard of burn pits.
I haven't, actually.
So when we're overseas, you got to be able to dispose of your waste. That could be human waste, medical waste, just trash, hazmat material, hazardous materials. And we got to be able to dispose of that somewhere. So they have pits on all these major camps overseas in Iraq and Afghanistan where they just dump their trash. And they douse it with diesel fuel and jet fuel, and these pits burn 24 hours a day. And whichever way the wind is blowing is where it blows that stuff. What happens is, especially with the hazardous material like lithium-ion batteries and such, these things burn. Little metal fragments get up in the air, and they float in the air. Mm. So even though they might be floating away from where you're at, because you can see the black cloud going, they eventually settles in the sand. And then when you go driving through all that, it kicks it all up, and you breathe it in, and you get all these metal fragments in your lung. And they're starting to find veterans who are 30 and 40 years old have lung cancer, and when they do a scan of their chest, it's littered with metal fragments. How do you get metal fragments in your chest and you weren't exposed to a bomb blast? You breathe it in. So I think we're going to see a lot of lung cancer from veterans in my age group, and we're going to see a lot of issues with TBI, traumatic brain injury. That's what we talked about earlier, where those shock waves from the bomb blast goes through your body. This will be the Agent Orange of the younger generation between the burn pits and the traumatic brain injury. This is what we'll have to do. I can only hope that we don't have to wait as long as the Vietnam veterans did to get compensation for our ailments that we incurred and how we have to live a less enjoyable life because of some of these things that we have to deal with.
Well, sure, because, you know, not everybody's going to make the service a career. And even if you do make it a career, you want to be healthy when you get out. And if you're not healthy, it's not good. And I agree with the compensation thing because we have all these people that, you know, like you said, you make really less than minimum wage.
Yeah.
Who volunteer and give 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, 8 years, who knows how many. And you know, you really, that's a big sacrifice on anybody's part.
It is, and I talked about my struggle finding a job, but even there's people I serve with that spend 20 or 30 years in, and they retired and they want to get away from the military, and now they're greeting at like Walmart or they're driving trucks. And those are important jobs. We need to have those people, and people who hold those jobs, they can have dignity and pride in what they do, but probably for somebody who spent 30 years in the military and no doubt has been in several wars, their ideal job is probably not greeting people at Walmart or driving a truck. They should be able to relax and enjoy life, but instead they're getting bounced around a semi trying to avoid traffic, you know. But that's the only job they could find.
Yeah, and it's a sad part, you know. There was a time where you could practically fall out your back door and find a job.
Yeah.
Now it's a little different these days, and I really think that maybe that's something you could consider later on, is like a jobs bank for veterans, maybe.
It's possible. The sky is the limit. And the nice thing about what I do is I'm able to connect people with other organizations who specialize in these things. So if someone comes to me for help, Aaron, I need help in this area. Someone had asked me the other day, I need help filling out a veterans benefit form through the VA. I don't have a lot of experience in that, but I have a guy here at the VFW, Al Starzek, who that's what he does. He's the service officer, and he knows all about that. So I, among other people, can connect veterans to the right resources, and that's something that I do enjoy doing. I can't do it all. I want to stay really localized in what I do, honoring our fallen, but I do particularly like helping homeless veterans and connecting people with the resources they need.
Well, it's admirable because I'm not aware of any other programs like what you're doing now. I mean, I'm sure there are, but just the fact that you can connect that and you have the mind and the mindset to do that, you know, I mean, especially with the accounting degree, that's not an easy one.
No, the nice thing is, I mentioned I have low overhead here. It's really just me. I mean, I'm a nonprofit, so I have two other people to meet the minimum requirements of a nonprofit.
But, sure.
We don't have a membership-based organization, so we don't have to worry about recruiting. It's mainly me running. I've got a lot of people that support what I do. They come out and support, and they're certainly part of the organization just by supporting. But the nice thing is that I can pretty much do anything. I can take this in any direction, and even if no one came out to support, I would still be out there running. You know, someone, if you went 10 years into the future, you'd see a lot of places go. You'd see businesses go. You'd see nonprofit organizations fold up. You'd see all kinds of stuff. But what you would see is I would still be out there doing the same thing that I started doing 5 years ago.
Wow.
I believe consistency is the key, and I think people look to me to say, you know what, I don't know what's going on in the world, but I know that Aaron's still out there running for the fallen soldiers.
Well, you know, and it's admirable because you started running years ago and just doing it yourself, and now you've got the right idea of starting an organization that will perpetuate it, you know, because like you said, you know, we may not be here tomorrow, but we may be here another 50 years. We don't know.
And
I think, and I really admire the drive that you have doing this. Maybe we should mention again where and when and how to donate and how to get a hold of you.
Yep. So this is a runner walk. It's family friendly. It's going to be this Saturday, July 27th. It starts at 7 a.m. The pre-race ceremony where we say the names of our fallen soldiers is going to be at 6:30 a.m. I recommend you get there at about 6 if you're going to come out. It's at Heritage Park in Taylor. So that's 12111 Pardee Road. And it's underneath the Sheridan Pavilion. So it's going to be the only place playing music at 6 a.m. in the morning on a Saturday, I assure you. But if you want to register online, you can do that at runningtohonor.nmotive. I'll spell that out phonetically. That's Echo November Mike Oscar Tango India Victor Echo.com. And that's the registration site. You can sign up to come to the event there, or you can sign up for the virtual 5K, and I'll mail you a medal and a bib from the race. The pictures are on the website there. And you can also donate through there. If you go to the Running Down or Facebook page, you can donate through there. Or if you just want to send in a check, that's fine too. 1515 Fort Street, Unit 423, Lincoln Park, Michigan, 48146. And I certainly appreciate the support. Everybody out there listening, even if you don't donate, just tell somebody freedom's not free. That's all I really ask. And that doesn't cost anything at all.
No, all gave some gave all.
Yes.
And Aaron Bartle, I thank you so much for your time and appearing here on WHFR Journal with us. And this will be available as a podcast also. So if anybody can't catch it tomorrow, it's tomorrow at 1 o'clock, which is beautiful. And, and I'll get you a copy of it also.
My friend. Awesome. Thank you.
And I thank you, sir, for your service to this country.
Thank you for not forgetting about the veterans.
Well, I can't. My father was a veteran, and we did have a joke about it because he did get out of boot camp the day the Japanese surrendered, so we used to say that they knew he was coming. But still, he did serve a year after that, and, everybody's... Now, just a quick question. Do you have a military history in your family, too? Have you got...
Yeah. My dad was in the Navy. My grandpa was in the Navy. Both my grandpas were in the Navy, actually. Yeah, I was in the Army. So it kind of runs our family. And that's what you see with these military people is most of them are military families. So they just generations after generations. There's a smaller portion where there are people who came from a less fortunate background and they have nothing to turn to, and they try the military and it becomes their family. But the majority of the military are generations of people who have served because it's just tradition. And if we didn't have those people, we might be living in a very different country right now where someone's telling us what time to go to bed and what kind of clothes we're going to wear.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And where you're going to work and what you're going to eat. And
yeah.
So just curious, why'd you choose the Army over the Navy?
Well, you know, I wanted to be out front on the front lines in combat arms. I wanted to see what was going on. I didn't want to hear explosions and be like, was that an explosion? What was that? I wanted to see what was going on and be the guy where I could possibly make a difference. And if nothing else, I would know instead of having ignorance is bliss. You know what I mean?
Right. And I would say you definitely had made a difference.
Thank you.
And I'm pleased to make your acquaintance, and I will be happy to help out with your organization.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And this is WHFR Journal. I thank you all for listening. This is Aaron Bartle, who is the founder of Running
to Honor.
Running to Honor. And it honors all the veterans that served. And I really thank you all for tuning in. And We'll see you on the next WHFR Journal. Thank you.
Yes,
well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to WHFR Journal. I am here with a gentleman with a cause that I
veteran of the Iraq War.
All be believing in
veteran Aaron for 6 years.
Yes. Yep.
Did I get it correctly?
Bartel, it's Hungarian.
Really thank the man for his service.
Bartal, but
okay,
pronounced Bartel.
I see. Very cool. Yeah, my grandmother.
Yeah, well, we had that one run over a little bit. Apologize for that, but. It was an honor talking to this gentleman. This is he has a very good idea. We can never thank our veterans enough. We have so many of them that have problems. They give us so much. They get paid so little. Sure, they can get some free college after they get out. A lot of times they can learn skills in the service that are applicable to civilian life. But the hardest part is making the transition back. It's easy to give it lip service on the 4th of July, Memorial Day, Veterans Day, other days that are important. But every day is important. So thank a veteran. Do a kind thing for just your neighbor, even if they're not a veteran. I mean, you know, if we all did one kind thing a day for a stranger, just think what a better world it might be. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in to WHFR Journal. I want to thank Susan McGraw and Alan Mazurek for giving me the opportunity to be a guest host on this show. And stay tuned for coming up with Highway 61 and with the best of the blues. You know, that's what we do here at WHFR Dearborn. We are Dearborn's radio station.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
Henry Ford College's Mirror News is looking for new writers. The newspaper is student-run and a great opportunity for budding journalists to gain experience. The Mirror News covers a variety of topics such as politics, new restaurants, art exhibits, local events, and recent films. If you would like to share your talents, email Dr. Kim at pkim@hfcc.edu or the editor at editor@hfcc.edu. See yourself in the Mirror News.
The Henry Ford Centennial Library is currently closed through fall 2019 for a major renovation project. In order to serve residents during this closure, both the Bryant Branch Library and the Esper Branch Library have extended their operating hours. Please visit dearbornlibrary.org for renovation updates and more detailed information regarding specific library services.
Attention licensed practical nurses. Are you looking for a convenient way to earn your RN degree? Do you need the flexibility of a program who recognizes you for your previous hard work as an LPN? Here's great news. Henry Ford College has exactly what you're looking for with their Advancement LPN to RN Bridge program. You can advance your career and become a licensed registered nurse. Want more info? Give us a call at our School of Health and Human Services at 313-845-9877. That's 313-845-9877.
Mexico.